We are now in a new era, in a new moment, because now our ideology is multipolar. Our ideology is declaration that Russia is not the part of the Western civilization. Russia is particular, original, and absolutely autonomous and independent civilization or civilizational state that represents the different kind of sovereignty, not only political or national, but spiritual, cultural, civilizational sovereignty.
This resistance in West Asia and in the steppes of Novorossiya, they intertwine. And that's why those who notice that in the Beltway, maybe four or five intellects over there notice what's going on. That's why they're terrified. Because they see that this is a phenomenon all across Eurasia, the resistance against the unilateral order that Alexander explained so well.
Hello, everyone. This is the New Rules Podcast, and I'm your host, Dimitri Symes, Jr. Today is probably our most powerful episode to date. So to help you get more of the enjoyment, we've decided to break up this super episode into two parts. You are currently watching part one. On my right, I have Alexander Dugin, one of Russia's leading political philosophers. And on my left, I have veteran geopolitical analyst and writer Pepe Escobar. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today. So, Alexander, I think I'll address my first question to you, because we're coming up on two important anniversaries. The first is the two-year anniversary since the start of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, and the second anniversary is the 10-year anniversary since the start of the war in the Donbas. How have these events changed Russia?
So I think we have two different countries. So the impact of these events, starting from Crimea and beginning of the rebellion of Donbas against Kyiv until now, and special military operation, these two events, they are two stages of the same process, I would say. That was the radical change of everything in Russia. So we have two different countries. The Russia before Maidan, before Donbas, before Crimea, before special military operation, and after. So we could say that 10 years we are living in Russia in different field, existential field, geopolitical field, cultural field, but a more drastic change was precisely after the beginning of the special military operation. These last 2 years were absolutely decisive. They are turning point in the self-consciousness of Russia. So the huge change is inside, not just the fact that we could stand the sanctions, we could stand against counter-attack, we have liberated a huge amount of the territory of ex-Ukraine. All we have now, multipolar world and not unipolar anymore. There is the clear end of global hegemony and Western leadership in the world. But all these events, all these processes are very important. But the most important aspect is the new self-understanding of Russia. So that is spiritual change. So we are not anymore the province of the global Western world. We are returning to ourselves, to our mission, and maybe to the highest moment of our national Russian history. So we are approaching to the event. Maybe for this event, Russian people was made by God. So this event is nearer and nearer. We could speculate and speak about that, but it is a kind of accomplishment of mission of the Katechan, of the keeper, because the Russian mission and the Christian Orthodox vision was to keep the Antichrist out of the humanity, to keep humanity safe from the son of perdition, the son of iniquity. And that is precisely the mission of Russia. And now we understand this mission very well, because our fight is not against Ukrainians, against just the West as geopolitical entity, but it is against modern Western Antichrist represented by globalist civilization. And I think this enemy we're fighting against is the enemy of all humanity, enemy of Islam people, enemy of China, and enemy of the Western people and society themselves.
And I want to pose the same question to you, Pepe, and I'm particularly interested in your perspective since you just returned from the Donbas. You have come back from the origins of this enormous rebellion that has shaken the world. Talk a little bit about what you saw in the Donbas and what stood out the most to you.
Wow, that was a transformative experience. I was shocked, in fact. It's like you have a jolt through your body, because one thing is to do a work of independent analytics, you know, looking at the big picture, looking at East against West, looking at the emergence of the multipolar world. And another thing is to go on the ground in the microcosm and actually see the people and see what they're doing, what they are fighting for. And I was immensely privileged to be very close to the Christian Orthodox battalions in large parts of the front in Donetsk, all the way to Mariupol. And they embraced me. We asked ourselves a lot of questions. And I saw many things that, especially for a Western, are shocking, in fact. First of all, the beauty of the rituals when you have a military priest going from each headquarters to another one, blessing the soldiers. Contract signed soldiers who volunteer to fight in the front lines. The purity of the ritual, the beauty of the ceremony, the chants, the very grave faces of all of them. And of course, and then it struck me. What was the meaning of this trip? Because this was a particular crucial juncture. 2 years after the start of the special military operations and almost 10 years after Maidan. So I was very lucky to be there now, exactly. And right before a multipolar conference we're going to have in a few days in Moscow, which will be absolutely essential. We're going to have first-class people from all over the world, and we'll be discussing the next steps towards multipolarity. I had to go there before. It's like it was the missing link for my work. I had to go to the black soil of Novorossiya to watch what? Where the rules-based international order came to die. So this was my number one conclusion of this mind-boggling trip, in fact.
So, what I find interesting is that a Russian and a Westerner have looked at the same situation and they've come to the same conclusion, that the two sort of trends that we're seeing is first a revival of traditional Orthodox Christianity, and at the same time, a new sense of mission, that this is not just about the liberation of Russian territories, but really a battle against the existing world order. Would that be an accurate assessment, Alexander?
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. That is much deeper. That is a spiritual fight. That is the fight maybe we have here, we have arrived here in special military operation at the point of the result of the history, because there was a kind of long story how the West has arrived to the point of modern West, modern liberal Biden's West, totally cutting all ties with tradition, with antiquity, with classical philosophy, spirituality, with Christianity. So that modern West that has chosen this path of modernization, secularization, humanism, materialism, atheism, has arrived to the last point where human being without God has lost its humanity or is on the eve to lose it forever in favor of post-human entities for artificial intelligence. So we are the Western civilization has arrived at a critical point of nihilism. And at that point, when all the planet, all the humanity was under the feet of the Western post-human hegemony in the unipolar world, there was rebellion of started in Ukraine, started in Donetsk, rebellion of Donetsk people, rebellion of Russia against these historical long cycles of years history. So that is something fantastic, because I when this rebellion in Donetsk has begun, I have seen when worker class men from miners from Donetsk region, very, very simple, very, very poor, and a meeting against Kiev and Maidan has declared, now is the time of Katehon. The person you never would imagine he could know such words. So that was absolutely impossible. That was a kind of spiritual awakening. And this awakening of Donetsk has awakened at its turn Russia. And Russian awakening followed. And now it is a kind of global humanity awakening against this tendency, not only just world rule-based world order is collapsing. I think that the Western civilization that dominated more and more and more over humanity, expanding its so-called values, has arrived at the point where the alternative pole, alternative power, alternative idea, alternative principle was manifested. So Russia has said, stop, West. Here you should stop. You are not alone on this planet. You could not do whatever you want. So stop. You are not alone. There is the other. There is a kind of witness of what you are doing. And we don't agree at all with everything you've done during these 500 years. So, and these 500 years, the modernity, Western-centered modernity was a kind of negative result of the previous history of humanity. That is the end of modernity. That is the end of the Western-centered world domination. That is made now in Donbass by the simple Russian people, soldiers, volunteers, fighting there. So that is that is the fight between angels and demons. It is not just between Ukrainians and Russians. That is much more transcendental as event. And I think that the other fronts of the same war, spiritual war will appear soon. And we see something is happening in the Middle East. Something will happen in the Taiwan and China, but that is not just the regional conflicts. That is something much deeper. There is the new fronts of the same spiritual war, the war where at the stake is the meaning of the end of the history, not just the end of the history, but the meaning, because it could end in one way or in other way. So if it should end, the history of humanity, everything that has beginning should have an end. But we insist that there will be alternative end of the history, not that wanted by modern or postmodern liberal hegemonic West.
And so, Pepe, you know, building off that point, you said that the Donbas is where the rules-based liberal international order goes to die. Could you elaborate on that? Why do you think that what's happening in the Donbas carries such significance for the collective West and its future?
Well, what's happening in Donbas perfectly illustrates what Alexander has just described. Let's say this is the microcosm that also represents the macrocosm, you know. It's a proletarian resistance movement. Donbas, it's a mining town, like this little pin that I have, which was given to me by an extraordinary character in Donetsk who built a school in secrecy so Ukrainian drones don't know where it is. And inside the school, there's a museum. And in this museum, which the kids who are studying math, geography, history, and languages in the school, they have a museum attached explaining to them the continuity of the history of Donetsk, which is extraordinary. You have a long exhibition about the Great Patriotic War. Then you go to the disastrous adventure in Afghanistan, where there were many fighters, Soviet Union fighters, who came from Donbas. And of course, what happened since 2014 after Maidan. And this is a sort of do-it-yourself museum parallel to the great Donetsk War Museum in the center of Donetsk, right behind the Shakhtar Donetsk football arena, which is sort of, this is the official version. So we have the DIY version, just like you have a sort of official shrine commemorating the children who have been shelled by the Ukrainians since 2014. And then when you go to the outskirts of Donetsk, on the way to the front lines, we are 5 kilometers away. We are in the third line of defense, 5 kilometers away from the front line. So you hear the booms like they are around the corner. The local people who live in this neighborhood with mud up to here, no water, no electricity, no public transportation. They have to walk 2 kilometers in the mud to buy their groceries, and they refuse to leave their working class neighborhood. They know perfectly what is at stake. They build their own shrine to the children victims of shelling as well. So when you see the power of resistance, and when you see, let's say, this Slavic axis of resistance all over the front lines, you know, from Kherson to Zaporozhye to Mariupol to Donetsk. He also, I had one day hit me in the middle of the night. So this is the counterpart of the axis of resistance in West Asia. So, you know, what Yemen, Ansarullah, and Hashd al-Shaabi in Iraq are doing to expel the hegemon from West Asia is what these people are doing to expel the subordinates of the hegemon from taking over their lands and actually massacring them, which was the original plan and was still the original plan before the start of the SMO, which was one of the reasons of the SMO. Russian intelligence had 100% certainty that there will be a blitzkrieg by the Ukrainians supported by NATO to basically conduct a massacre in Donbas. So, you know, this resistance in West Asia and in the steppes of Novorossiya, they intertwine. And that's why those who notice that in the Beltway, maybe 4 or 5 intellects over there notice what's going on. That's why they're terrified, because they see that this is a phenomenon all across Eurasia, the resistance against the unilateral order that Alexander explained so well.
And Alexander, I want to talk a little bit more about the ideological aspect of it, because as you noted, the Russia of 10 years ago and the Russia today are two completely different countries. Could you sort of explain the contours of a new Russian ideology that's emerging as a result of this conflict And how is it different from Western liberalism?
Let us start with the 90s. In 90s, after the fall of the Soviet Union, there was a kind of ideological transformation of the Soviet society, Soviet ideology. Soviet ideology was considered to be anti-liberal, anti-capitalist, and in the system of bipolar world, when one pole was destroyed by itself, the only one ideology left, liberalism. And liberalism was absolutely, without any criticism, accepted by Russia. So during 90s, before Putin came to power, we lived as the province of this global unipolar world, and liberalism was embedded, installed as operational system in Yeltsin's Russia. When Putin came to power, he has changed one point. He agreed that Russia is the part of the West. The Russia is the part of the capitalist unipolar world, but he has said there is only one condition I insist on. We are sovereign part of it. So the ideology, values, the main tendencies were imitated from the West, but everything was put in the context of the sovereignty. But the West didn't believe us during 90s, and when Putin came to power, they believed us less than before. So they didn't accept us when we, with Yeltsin, wanted to integrate without conditions into the West. And when Putin has declared the condition, that sovereignty, that was the scandal. But until Maidan and until SMO, we continued to pretend that we are following that ideology. We are part of the West, but we are sovereign part of the West. Let you recognize our sovereignty, and we will be yours. So we will give you gas, we will supply you with our raw materials and resources. We are at your disposal, but just one thing. We are independent, sovereign nation state of the Western Hemisphere, and we accept your rules, and we accept your rules-based world order under one condition. And finally, when Maidan has happened, Putin could not anymore continue this. This ideology of so-called sovereign Russian Western centrism, and because he has remarked and observed that the West lied from the beginning to the end, tricked, cheated Russia at any turn of that, because the West would like only one thing: desovereignization of Russia. So it was impossible, and Putin didn't want to accept this impossibility. He insisted and insisted and insisted on the sovereignty, and the West insisted and insisted on the contrary. So that was the moment of the real change, ideological change, has come only with SMO. When special military operations started, that was the end of both ideologies of the 90s and of the Putin's first 22 years of the rule. So we are now in a new era, in a new moment, because now our ideology is multipolar. Our ideology is declaration that Russia is not the part of the Western civilization. Russia is particular, original, and absolutely autonomous and independent civilization or civilizational state that represent the different kind of sovereignty, not only political or national, but spiritual, cultural, civilizational sovereignty. So, and that now is at high speed is acquiring the form, ideological form. This process is not totally ended, totally completed. This process is only in the first stage. So this new, totally new, neither communist nor liberal nor national ideology is just being born, I would say. So that is the that is very special moment. That is as birth of the child, birth of some entity of new life, because the life of the spirit of the idea is the real life, more intensive, more deep, more more alive than everything else. So now we assist these profound and deep spiritual change, the birth of Russian idea, the birth of Russian ideology, the birth of affirmation of independent Russian civilization. But we have lost many opportunities to keep our heritage from Slavophile Eurasianists, because for 100 years we were under influence either of communism, Western ideology, or of liberalism, the other Western modernist ideology. So now we are obliged to rediscover our deep identity, to recreate, revise all our certainties. So we need to recombine understanding of each period of our history. We need to create new synthesis. So that is the great challenge to affirm Russian world vision, Russian ideology, new Russian ideology that would give the correct interpretation of each historical period. This ideology is not just about the past, it is about the future, because this ideology will be the matrix of the new Russia and the new world, new cosmos that we are constructing now.
So, in a sense, the new Russian ideology is to be seen, because it's in the process of being formed right now due to the geopolitical turmoil, due to the massive changes taking place in the world.
Exactly. And that has to do this, the birth of this ideology, the birth of something new, not just restoration of something old. That is, we are speaking about the birth of something new, would affect all humanity, because maybe that will be new issue, new way out of the situation we are all in. So, including the West. So the West as well is in a dead end, so an impasse. So for the West, the decision or creation, or the process of creation of this newly born Russian ideology could be as well an extremely important event, because the West should as well to give the answers. If the majority of the Western people accept globalism, artificial intelligence, LGBT agenda, and this clearly process of dehumanization, final dehumanization of the humanity, or if not, if the West wouldn't accept that, the West needs alternative, and this alternative is not ready-made. So there's something like what we do now, the West should do if it will reject the agenda of globalists. And it is very, very likely, I think, that there comes the moment when they will reject it finally.
I definitely want to return to the topic of ideological changes and geopolitical shifts, but I want to return to the topic first of Putin, because as Alexander pointed out, in the early 2000s, Putin made a fairly attractive deal to the West, or a fairly attractive offer, that we want to be part of the greater collective West, mm-hmm. that we want to be integrated economically, politically, and even in the form of militarily, if we're talking about potentially joining NATO. Mm-hmm. And Russia's a big country, natural resources, you know, 150 million people. It would have been a big asset for the West. Mm-hmm. But the only thing that they asked was not to treat Russia completely as a junior partner and to respect Russia's position, you know, on critical matters. Why is it that the West ended up rejecting Putin? What's the real reason the West seems to have, from the very beginning, a visceral opposition and hatred of President Putin?
Well, there are many historical reasons, but essentially, I would say that the people who really run the show in Washington, and I'm talking about the Washington and the Beltway as a whole, I'm talking about what our friend Ray McGovern described as the MISIMAT, the military, industrial, congressional, intelligence, media, academia, think tank complex, which is an enormous bubble. You lived in Washington, Dimitri, you know how this bubble works, right? And how this bubble only thinks looking at itself, looking at its own images in the mirror, right? The other for this bubble never existed, or if it existed, it was in a subordinate position. So it was always about power play and about divide and rule. No wonder they inherited that from the British Empire, who copied from the Roman Empire. So they were always looking for an external enemy. The problem in the 90s is that there was no external enemy. They had to fabricate an enemy. Since the start of the unipolar moment, okay, unipolar moment, we are the greatest power in the history of humanity, but we need somebody to fight against. So it took them 10 years to find the enemy, and we all remember who the first enemy was. Essentially, Alexander said it, essentially Islam. So they prefabricated a war, in fact, against Islam as a whole, using as pretext 9/11, which we can discuss ad infinitum as a false flag or not, certainly a false flag. And of course, it was misguided because they could not analyze correctly the historical juncture at the end of the millennium when they were the unipolar, the sole superpower. China was still growing, 10, 12, 15, 14% a year. And Russia was extremely weak after the Yeltsin years. And they had this new ruler, which, especially in the Beltway, nobody had any clue about. So this was in 2000. The next year, 2001, we had this, let's say, the beginning of the 21st century, which was 9/11. And then we already knew what they were up to, which was something very raw, crude, and basic. Basically, by those Trotskyist-based neocons, all of them, or as we call them, the Straussian, I call them psychos because they are psychos, essentially, with a sort of biblical psychopathology applied to geopolitics. Remember the famous seven countries in 5 years. You remember that, nah? When Wesley Clark heard that at the Pentagon. This is biblical, essentially. And that has been the plan from the beginning, and even before 9/11. In fact, 9/11 was the pretext for them to, you know, unleash this war against different spots of Islam, and of course, because they were antagonistic to the aircraft carrier in West Asia, Israel. We all know what happened during the war of terror years, right? Putin was reorganizing Russia, and China was growing nonstop. When they woke up, which was after the 2010s, it was already too late, because Putin was basically organizing Russia as a sovereign civilization state again, and starting literally from scratch in the year 2000. And China was already, for all practical purposes, the number one commercial trade power in the world. So then what do? They double down and they create an artificial clash against Russia and China at the same time, which is what I've been watching these past few years. So what was the counterpunch? The Russia-China strategic partnership, which is now at all levels, military, geopolitical, geoeconomic, influential, spiritual, etc. And now the worst prophecies of their own so-called, intellectual superpowers a la Brzezinski is right in front of them. It's not the emergence of a peer competitor in Eurasia. It's the emergence of a strategic alliance of peer competitors in Eurasia, which is the foundation of this new multipolar world. And there's nothing they can do about it except unleash a sort of Samson option, which will be a nuclear war, which will destroy everybody. And they don't even have the intellectual capacity of a little bit of self-introspection to learn from their mistakes, to learn from their artificial wars against Islam and against Russia, China, and now against the global South practically as a whole, which is the mix. When the war in Ukraine meets the war in Israel-Palestine, we see the hegemon against the global South as a whole practically. It is impossible for them to backtrack and analyze this holistically. It's impossible. First of all, because they don't respect the other. They never read Lévi-Strauss, for that matter. The other is always to be subordinated. And, of course, the fact that this wet dream of total control and total power, which worked from 1945 to until 10 years ago, has vanished. And they don't have a plan B.